Today's show is brought to you by FreshBooks. It's smart mobile accounting designed specifically for freelancers and small business owners. You can try FreshBooks for 30 days on us with no credit card required. Go to freshbooks.com/sports and enter sports in the How You Heard About Us section. Jared Cook, the packaging.
All right.
The packaging was always very shiny, and then you'd get inside and you'd open the action figure and an arm would be missing. That's what Jared Cook's career is. I think tackle is like quarterback right now. You can't be awful. You have to be average at the very least because you have to give yourself a chance. Welcome to a very special edition of the MMQB podcast. I'm Robert Mays. He's Andy Benoit. Andy, we're recording on a weird day. We're recording on a specific topic. We're getting a little off kilter here. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to keep us on the rails, but I'm going to do my best.
Well, this is when the great ones rise up, Mays.
When adversity hits?
Yeah, or when it's self-inflicted, because it was kind of our idea to do this special free agency podcast. But you have to, because free agency will probably be the flash in the pan part of it's going to be midweek next week. It's going to be Wednesday. So why would we release something midday Wednesday? We don't know what the NFL is going to look like until probably Thursday night. So we got to do a preview.
We're trying to get this to you guys early Monday morning, so you have a couple days to chew on it, think about it. Use it as your Bible for who's going to get signed where, because this is going to be the definitive source, Andy. I think that everyone should come to us and nowhere else.
Well, let's hope not, because, let's hope so, I guess. But for the players at hand, I get the sense I'm not going to say a lot of super nice things about the guys we're about to talk about. Not that it's a bad free agent group, but what people always need to remember whenever the topic of free agency is at hand is guys become free agents for bad reasons. Now, that doesn't mean they can't play, but they're either overpaid at some other point in their career, they're on the downslide, they're injured too often, they're a pain in the ass to work with on a day-to-day basis, whatever it is. Great players don't become free agents. You have to, the guys who know you best, your coaches, your front office, they have to give up on you in order for you to get to the place you're going to be at here.
That's very true, and that the example of that is where we're going to start. We're going to start with the most exciting position, which is quarterback, where there are really no players that are available. So shocking.
Well, would you say, I mean, we talked about Osweiler on the show last week or the other day, and so I would be, and we probably don't need to get into him because I think he'll wind up back in Denver one way or the other. Fitzpatrick, do you see any chance of him leaving the Jets? And how many teams in the NFL do you think he could be a starting quarterback for this season?
I really don't know. I'm not that impressed with Ryan Fitzpatrick. If you look at the actual supporting cast Ryan Fitzpatrick had last year, how many in the NFL were better? How many circumstantial things were there for quarterbacks where they had that group of receivers, a very solid offensive line, and a good running game? It's hard to find a better, more comfortable spot for a quarterback, and I still feel like there were times last year where he held them back a little.
Yeah, I struggle with Fitzpatrick. I think he's a fine player. I think there's a place for him in the league to start, be a starting QB, but there's an erraticness to him a little bit, and it's curtailed more. I mean, with the Jets, they've done more spread stuff, which gets the ball out of his hand. He's comfortable in that Chan Gailey system, so he's become a more stable player, but he's still not an inherently stable player. So ball location can be hit or miss. Sometimes he trusts his arm too much, so you never quite know what you're going to get with the guy. Having said that, for a team like the Jets that's built to win with defense, they've got a pretty talented defense still, and they've got weapons around them and a system that works for them, I think that's important they re-sign him because they don't have a better choice right now. And I think you can win 10 games and get to the playoffs, and then who knows what happens from there if your QB is Ryan Fitzpatrick in these kind of circumstances.
I tend to agree, and just kind of what I was talking about before. If he goes to a team like Los Angeles, who knows what we're going to get? There isn't a great infrastructure there for a quarterback to be successful. I think with both the Jets and Fitzpatrick, there's a certain prudency in saying, all right, let's go back to a situation where I'm comfortable, where there's a lot of talent. He's 33 years old. You think he wants to uproot his family and move halfway across the country? I mean, it makes sense for everyone involved. So I think that's what's ultimately going to happen. But with the Jets, we're looking at a situation where this is a team with $6.6 million in cap room. They don't have a ton of money to work with. So however much Fitzpatrick's going to get, it's probably going to require a little bit of massaging, some creativity. But we've seen teams do that before. So I'm thinking they can get it done if they want to get it done.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the Rams too, because that's a great example. Fitzpatrick's a kind of – he's a placeholder QB, but he's not a caretaker QB. And there's a difference between the two. If
totally.
The Rams need a guy – Right. The Rams are going to line up in base personnel with a tight end, maybe two tight ends, an extra tight end or a fullback on the field. They're going to run play action. It's a dink and dunk offense. That's not Fitzpatrick's game. He's got that wild stallion element to him, and you can try to tame it, but you can't corral it. And so the way to tame it is to spread out and give him quicker throwing decisions. But he's got to be a spread him out, throw him type of QB. He's not someone you just, because he's a veteran, we plug him in and he'll be very good at handing it off and getting us in and out of the huddle. That's not the kind of QB he is. And it's important teams understand the difference there, because the Rams, if he went to the Rams, that'd be entirely wrong for all parties involved.
I agree. One more guy I want to touch on very quickly, just for my own personal interest. Do you think that a team would be completely crazy to give the reins to Chase Daniels, a starting quarterback, for 1 year?
I don't know enough about Chase Daniels. I mean, I've seen his snaps, but I've seen all of them. But as you know, there haven't been enough of them to evaluate. Is this a leading question? Because you're curious, or is this the Missouri factor? Is that why?
Yeah, of course. I mean, Chase Daniels has provided me with many great moments in my life, and I want only the best for him. So if there's a chance that a team's just going to be like, you know what, our quarterback sucks, let's just give Chase Daniels a shot because it can't be any worse, I wouldn't hate that.
Well, I think there are some people in Kansas City who believe he can be that kind of guy. I mean, boy, I'm looking. He's 29. He'll be 30 years old in October.
God, that makes me feel old.
That makes me feel old, too, because he's born the same year I'm born. If what you're talking about with Chase Daniel were to happen, it probably would have happened by now, don't you think?
Yeah, it probably did. It probably would. I'm mostly just kidding. All right, let's move on to one of the more interesting positions among this entire group, which is running back. You have guys that run the whole gamut here. Let's start with the two top guys, kind of by consensus. Doug Martin, who had 1,400 yards last year, 4.9 yards per carry, second leading rusher in the league, a massive comeback season for him right when it was time to get paid. And then Lamar Miller, who...
Are you hinting at something there? Are you hinting at something with Doug Martin?
I don't know. Some guys, they get a little juiced up. Not actually juiced up. Let me be clear. I just mean they get motivated when it's time to walk into that contract season. And the other guy that's right alongside Doug Martin in some people's eyes, and other people's he's not, is Lamar Miller, who I think is a very good player. I will talk about both these guys in a second. The fact that Lamar Miller only rushed for 890-something yards last year because they never gave him the ball is very, very strange to me. That Miami situation, I will never get anything about it. But let's talk about both these guys, Andy. If you're a team looking for a running back, do you think, all right, the Doug Martin from last season is the guy I'm getting? Or are you a little buyer beware just based on what two or three seasons before that looked like?
I would assume I'm getting the guy from last season because injuries were a factor the years before that. And yeah, and Martin, I'll tell you, Tampa Bay needs to re-sign him because Martin, kind of like Fitzpatrick, where there's a specific type of offense that fits the skill set, I think Martin's that kind of guy as well. He is a much – I don't know what the numbers bear out, but watching the film and the flow of the game and when your carries come and how they pan out, he's a better runner behind a lead-blocking fullback. He's better out of I formations. He's a classic old-school type of running back. He gets small through the cracks in between the tackles. He's not fast, but he can run away from you in confined spaces. He's got pretty good short area movement. I don't think like he's a different type of runner to me than Lamar Miller. So a team should not be pursuing Doug Martin and Lamar Miller and then taking whichever one they get the best deal with. I think he works in a traditional system. Tampa Bay is a five-step drop passing game. They're very old school in their approach through the air, and they need a guy like Martin on the ground to balance that out. So there aren't a lot of offenses that suit a guy like Martin to the fullest, and I think Tampa Bay, however, is one of those offenses.
I totally agree. I feel like he absolutely does everything they need him to do. You know what else I love about him? He has great balance. There are a lot of plays where he'll get a helmet to the thigh anywhere else, kind of shift his weight to one side and keep his feet and keep going in a way that you don't see a lot of running backs do right now. And that offensive line, those are world beaters up there for that team. What he did last year is not a product of having a great offense and having it's not what DeMarco Murray did 2 years ago in Dallas, is what I'm saying. This is a guy who had to make a lot of those yards himself, and he had a fantastic season. I agree. I think that dirt cutter offense is unique in the way that the NFL works today, and he fits it perfectly. And Tampa, we're looking at right now, they have $49 million in cap room. They can't afford Doug Martin. It just depends now, what are you looking at for the actual price tag? I mean, is he going to be a top-of-the-market running back?
I was surprised they didn't franchise tag him, to be honest. The franchise tag's a little pricey for given that running backs, I guess the belief is they're devalued more every year. $11.8 million this year. I would have franchise tagged him just to have the negotiating power there. I mean, what else are they going to do with that cap space that Tampa Bay has? Who would they go – if they were to get someone else, who would they go out and find that would be an upgrade over Doug Martin? There's nobody on the veteran market for sure.
Oh, no, I don't think a running back. I just think that you're looking at other positions where they're saying, all right, maybe we need an upgrade here. Maybe they go look for a corner. Maybe they try to do something at safety where they desperately need some help.
Yeah. Yeah, I got you. So Lamar Miller, I'm interested that you brought him up because I was thinking you were going to say as one of these two top backs, I was thinking you'd say Matt Forte, your guy from Chicago. But you would put Lamar Miller ahead of Forte in the conversation?
They're just different at this point in their career. Lamar Miller is 25. You know, Lamar Miller has...
Is he that young?
Yeah, he's 25 years old. He has 638 career carries. I mean, this is a guy...
Yeah, he's actually 24. He won't be 25 till the end of April, so he's a young 25.
Yeah, so this is his year 25 season. So you're getting a 25-year-old running back who's been very productive and doesn't have a lot of tread on those tires. And I agree with you. He needs a very specific sort of system, but in the way that Doug Martin... They both do, but they're very different types of backs. But I think that the way the league works right now, there are a lot of offenses that you could fit Lamar Miller in. He is a very fast, very chunk yardage, breakaway, rip off some gains type guy. And I think a lot of offenses would be very well suited with him.
I agree. He's a finesse runner, and that's not a slam at him. It would be if he played in Doug Martin's type of system in Tampa there, but he could be a spread back. I don't know how he is in the passing game. I haven't thought about that much. He doesn't show up in my film notes as a receiving back. He didn't do a ton of it in Miami. But he always surprises me with his ability to get to the perimeter. He's always a hair faster than you would think he is at the start of the play.
Yeah, I mean, and he really is. And that type of back, that type of athleticism just doesn't come around that often. When you talk about Matt Forte is 30. You know, there's in the point in their careers, it's just a different situation for Matt Forte. I do think that he has some gas left in the tank, and I think he can help the right sort of team. I mean, that sort of team that we've mentioned before is maybe somebody like New England, who they probably aren't willing to pay market value, but if they can coax him out there and say, hey, look at the situation you're walking into. Do you want to play for a Super Bowl? I think Matt Forte has made enough money. He's been in the league long enough that that might be a selling point.
Yeah, and maybe he would take him. I mean, what's New England's? Oh, they don't have any. They're barely at nine, almost $10 million in cap space. So, you're right. They probably couldn't pay him market value. But theoretically, he would work. And Lamar Miller's receiving numbers, by the way, are not very good. So, and you have to take that into consideration, because when we're talking about a guy like, theoretically, Forte would work great in New England's system, because they are not only a spread, quick strike offense, but they displace their backs a lot. And this is the difference between a Forte and a Lamar Miller. Forte can line up in the slot or out wide. And anytime you have a guy like that, especially mixed with a tight end, with a Gronkowski, defenses have to reveal a lot in order to cover it. They almost always have to tell you if it's man or zone based on who they put across from the running back if he's split out wide. And you can't disguise a whole lot, and you can have matchups dictated to you if you're the defense, if you're not responding to it with specific man-to-man concepts. So it's hard to play against versatile running backs in spread systems. And what's unique is Miller is probably a better pure runner than Forte right now, and that might even be debatable because Forte is still pretty smooth. But Forte, for this type of system that their running skills match, Forte is probably a better complete player for the system, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a team like that, he fits well with them. I'm looking at just this list of options that he might have. It's really hard to imagine a place that can maximize his skill set. I just looked at Oakland for, I mean, Oakland, every team, Oakland is in the running for every single player because they have $70 million in cap space. But can you imagine him as a kind of a pass catching option in that Oakland offense with him and Latavius Murray? That actually intrigues me a little bit.
That's a great example of a type of system that works for him, because Oakland's not a spread system like as we come to think of it, but they played that way a lot more than you'd realize last year for two reasons. One, I think Bill Musgrave learned a lot of the stuff and spread or the flow of it when he was Philadelphia's QB coach at 1 year under Chip Kelly. He's now their offensive coordinator in Oakland. And two, it fits Derek Carr's skill set. He's a quick twitch, get the ball out. He's pretty good at diagnosing coverages before the snap. So if they added a Matt Forte, that was already the most diverse offense in the league schematically last year. They did more with different formations and personnel packages than any offense. If they added a Forte, that could be a tipping point type of thing. And I think they'd want him because they signed Roy Helu 2 years ago.
That's right.
Either last year or 2 years ago. You don't sign Roy Helu unless you have a specific need for a pass-catching back, because that's the only value Helu brings to the table.
That's a great comparison. I didn't even think about that. Let's talk about Arian Foster very briefly. Do you feel like a team would still want Arian Foster as its running back when you consider just how risky he is on a week-to-week basis, even being in the lineup?
Well, I think you have to find a deal that accounts for that riskiness at this point. He was as good a runner, in fact, as good of an all-around back at the top of his game as anybody in the NFL.
I love him.
So the question, I loved him too. Let's assume that the injuries have taken a toll and he's now no longer the same runner he was. But he still has that all-around skill set. He knows how to be a receiver. He the blocking, take it or leave it with him. But how do you assign a value to that? I would say whatever Forte will get signed before Foster. It's just the nature of things. And whatever Forte gets, I think a team would offer Foster two-thirds of that kind of a deal with less guarantee. Forte will get some guaranteed money. I would give Foster less money, less guarantees.
What do you think about Denver
as a place for Arian Foster?
If he can go there for cheap. C.J. Anderson is a restricted free agent. I assume they'll match whatever he gets offered and he'll be back. But Ronnie Hillman is also a free agent. So you're looking at your top two backs maybe on the way out, at least one of them probably. You bring in Foster on the cheap. You have him and C.J. Anderson.
Yeah, well, he played for Kubiak, as you know. It doesn't strike me as a great idea. And I couldn't tell you why, though. How about this? Because there's two other backs that we don't need to talk at length about, but I think will be the guys that Foster's trying to beat out for places in free agency. One of them is Chris Ivory, who everyone agrees is also a little delicate, and that's partly a nature of his violent running style.
Absolutely.
But as a number two back, as a compliment, he's great. So would you take Ivory or would you take Foster if you just had to make a split-second decision?
I'd still take Foster because I think the ceiling is higher.
Okay.
If neither of them – here's my argument for Foster, and also why I think Seattle would be an intriguing place for him. The ceiling is still higher with Foster. If you can get a year out of Arian Foster, maybe it all breaks right, then he can still be that guy. The ceiling with Chris Ivory just isn't that high. I like Chris Ivory, but it's just nowhere near what it would be with Arian Foster. So if you're rolling the dice with both guys, I would rather throw another pair at Arian Foster, if that makes sense.
The other guy was thinking, just because they both have an upright running style, he's not as light-footed or smooth as Foster, but is James Starks from Green Bay.
He's 30.
Would you take Foster? Is he 30? Well, okay,
yes.
He's 30, but he hasn't had the beating, though. He hasn't taken nearly as many snaps as Foster, who's 29.
True.
He'll be 30 in August.
Yes, but I was looking at it. I was like, oh, James Starks, that's kind of a young option some team might take a chance on. Oh wait, James Starks is 30.
Let's keep in mind Foster. I'm looking at his numbers now. When he was healthy for 13 games in 2014, which
he was
is
a
not
monster.
Enough still, but
he was a monster.
Yeah, he had 1,200 yards rushing. He had barely over 300 receiving, but 5 touchdowns there. I think Foster. I for the reasons you brought up, I tend to agree with you on Foster. I'd still take Forte, and I'd pay the premium to have him over Foster. But there's a place in the NFL for Arian Foster as a number two running back, and a zone scheme that he's familiar with probably wouldn't be the worst thing. If, I mean, Denver might be a good solution.
A couple more things I want to touch on before we get out of here. One, just something to chew on. What if Doug Martin went to Dallas?
Interesting one, because it's a different type of running game. I don't know if I'd do that, because I don't know how he is behind such a predominantly outside zone rushing attack. Maybe he'd be better. I don't know, but I haven't seen it. I know how he is behind an I formation, and I know how he is with gap scheme, pull blockers, that sort of thing. I don't know about the Dallas one, because he's going to cost more. He's going to be a gamble at that point for the price that he'd be. Maybe he'd be good. He is good at turning the corner. I mean, so maybe he'd be fine, but I wouldn't risk it.
So how about Arian Foster in Dallas then?
As a compliment?
I mean, you have two older injury-prone running backs, but Arian Foster in that offense, I just imagine him putting his foot in the ground with that offensive line and just wreaking havoc. But again, he has to be on the field to do that.
If you have Foster, I mean, boy. Yeah, because Dallas might need a running back in free agency. I mean, they have McFadden there, but nobody else to join him.
Darren McFadden played 16 games for the second time in his career last year. That is not a dude you can rely on.
If I'm Dallas, I think I would take, because I have McFadden, and he did stay healthy for me last year, so I'll bet on that again. I think I'd take Ronnie Hillman over these guys, and I'd want a change-up type of back.
That's a really interesting one. Okay, so that I like that a lot. And so in that same mold, change-up back when we're talking about the Cowboys, two guys' names I just want to throw out very quickly before we move on. People to look out for if your team is looking for a running back that I think can add value for on the cheaper side. One is Lance Dunbar, who is coming off a torn ACL and I think was awesome in Dallas last year when given a shot. If you need a guy that can catch the ball and be a third down back for you, I think he still has value. And the other guy that every time he touched the ball this year, I thought I was a little worried if I was the other team, is Bilal Powell.
I just think he was more versatile than I thought.
Yeah. So yeah. Those are two guys that are available.
You like these receiving backs. You like the pass catchers.
I mean, it's 2016, man. I think we have to like those guys. They have more value than they've ever had.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think conceptually, those guys are good players. So yeah, I would agree with you.
All right, let's get to the actual pass catchers. Not a very excitement-inducing group. It is not a great set of players, especially with Alshon Jeffrey getting franchise tagged. Probably the number one wide receiver available in free agency is Marvin Jones, which I like Marvin Jones, but that's not it's not like a Hollywood big name listing there.
No, he's clearly a number two receiver, and he's acrobatic along the sideline. He tracks the ball pretty well. He runs better than you'd guess. There have been some injury concerns with him as well.
Yeah.
But you can upgrade your receiving core. In fact, let's put it this way. If Cincinnati does not re-sign Marvin Jones, and they probably won't, they're going to have that's a step back for their wide receiving core. That's a downgrade. In fact, Cincinnati's got Mohamed Sanu, I just realized, is also a free agent. So
it's a really weird situation because they don't normally do this. When they have a position that's about to – the clock is about to run out on it, they usually supplement it in the draft or elsewhere, and they haven't done it with this group. I mean, there's a chance that their roster in general – and safety is the same way. There's a chance their roster in general takes a big step back next year because they've shown a propensity in the past for not being willing to overpay guys.
Yeah, you're right. They have. They'd rather bring them in, develop their own. I think they're more comfortable with James Wright, their seventh-round pick from 2014, who's played very sparingly. But I wouldn't be surprised if they feel he could become their next Marvin Jones for them and be their number two. And he's on a much cheaper contract, obviously. But, yeah, Marvin Jones, someone will sign him. I don't know what kind of numbers he'll get because we got to see how the market with the inflated cap resets at this position. The other guy who's like Marvin Jones, not necessarily stylistically, but just where he's at in his career, is Rishard Matthews coming out of Miami. And I was thinking he'd be a dark horse for someone, but then I saw headlines the other day saying Matthews doesn't want to be anything less than a number two, which I don't know how he decides what's a number one and what's a number two and that sort of thing. But he to me is the other guy that stands out from a very limited wide receiving group.
Who would you rather have, Marvin Jones or Rishard Matthews?
I would rather have, I mean, people hate it when I say this. It depends a little bit on my system, but I think I'd rather have Marvin Jones.
Jones is
a better perimeter player. Matthews is probably better between the numbers.
Yes.
But the perimeter is where the explosiveness comes from. And you can also, the other thing, a perimeter guy, you can get him productivity in the numbers by the way you line him up. If he's in the slot or in motion, he'll still get clean access off the line and he can still compete there. A guy who's only good inside the numbers, it's almost impossible to take him outside and have him win one-on-one because he's got less space with the sideline and corners can be more physical against him.
I agree with all of that. I think my team that I still think about with Marvin Jones, I've said it before, Atlanta just makes too much sense because he is an outside the numbers option. They just cut Roddy White and need a number two receiver. And because Julio Jones lines up in so many different places, you want that consistent force outside the numbers and somebody that can stretch the defense, which Marvin Jones absolutely can. And Matt Ryan isn't always as accurate as you would like, and Marvin Jones is really good adjusting the balls in the air. His catch radius is pretty big for a guy that's on the smaller side.
Yeah. No, that would be fine with me. And Atlanta's got $30 million in cap space. They could afford to bring him in. They obviously just got rid of Roddy White, who really wasn't a factor last year anyway. Atlanta's in the market for at least one, probably two wide receivers. So Marvin Jones, that he should be on their radar. Who are the other guys? And I mean, Travis Benjamin, I'd talk about him, but I never remember which one's Benjamin and which one's Gabriel and which one's, you know, if Andrew, thank goodness Andrew Hawkins doesn't have dreadlocks, because then there I couldn't tell anybody in the Browns apart. So I don't think Benjamin's a guy. He's at the top of the list we're looking at, though, for free agents at wide receiver.
I think that a team that really needs a downfield option might want to consider Travis Benjamin. I think that his numbers this year will probably pump up his value more than it deserves to be. But if you're a team that really doesn't have somebody that can take the top off, he can't. And that still has value. I mean, think about, what if you're Carolina and you just need one more shot guy because Devin Funchess and Travis Benjamin are tiny? I mean, I don't know how much he's going to get paid, but there's that kind of offense that really likes to push it. I feel like he does have some value.
Well, he needs to, it's manufactured value though. It's a great example of what we just talked about with you can't, he's a guy that needs to be inside in order to get help with more field space and a clean release off the line. You can't ask him at all to go outside and beat a press corner. Now he might be able to catch a few balls outside, but you know what I'm saying? He's not going to line up there 25 times a game and scare anybody. I don't think he would, and I know we're not talking about Carolina. I know what you're saying. A team that needs just speed to lift the coverage. He's small, though, and there are some teams like Carolina that believe in big receivers for very specific reasons, and they'd rather have size than speed, I think. More teams would probably rather have speed than size, though. So someone can get Benjamin. Now, the question is, what? And it's not a great receiving core for this year in the draft, as I understand it. Have you heard that as well?
Yeah, I wrote about it today. It's kind of a boring draft in terms of skill position players. There aren't a ton of guys that people are excited about.
So maybe that helps a guy like Travis Benjamin. Well, how about, let me give you one name before we move on to tight ends here. What about Anquan Boldin? Where do you see him playing next season?
He can play for my team any day, so if he wants to come do that, I'm in. He's one of my favorite players in the history of the NFL. I can't see Anquan Boldin with clear eyes.
Okay. Well, what do you like about him so much?
Oh, I just love his style. I mean, that guy, he ran a 4.740 at the Combine when he was 22 years old, and he's maybe a Hall of Famer. That is, it should be impossible to do what he's done. He's like... like half wide receiver, half Wolverine. Like the guy is ridiculous.
He's a great illustration of how speed can, even though we just talked about speed with Benjamin and that's his whole game, it still can be overrated at the receiver position for the reason that you're in command as a wide receiver, meaning the defense always has to respond to you. So whether you're fast or slow, almost it isn't as big a deal as knowing how to run your routes and how to set guys up, because ultimately the game will operate at whatever speed you inject to it on that part of the field. It'll be a slower game if you're going to be out there. But Bolden's been very productive as a slow guy. There are corners in the league who fear slower receivers more than fast ones early in games because they're so difficult to play against. You're not used to it. I would sign Boldin just because I think people thought he was washed up in Baltimore years ago.
Yes.
I think Baltimore thought that. And you know what? He probably was, but he doesn't. He can play washed up because his game's not predicated on that athletic prowess. It's predicated on toughness at the point of the ball's arrival, physical strength, and understanding the nuances of body angles and all that stuff. So I would put him in my lineup just to take a chance on him to see if maybe the Magic still won't run out with him.
My man broke his face in a game and played the next week. His injury designation on the bottom line that week was Anquan Boldin, broken face, active. That's all you need to know about Anquan Boldin's career. Also, he has 13,000 receiving yards. That's also something you should know. All right, let's move on.
Yeah, he'll be an interesting Hall of Fame debate in a few years, too. Oh, he'll be a real interesting discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will vote for him 100 times out of 100. Let's get to tight ends. This is pretty breezy. Not a ton of names to talk about here. Two of them in San Diego. Antonio Gates is a free agent. He's also 36 years old. I can't imagine he gets out of San Diego.
I wouldn't let him get out of San Diego. Yeah. And Antonio Gates can still play. He's another example of guys that he's lost his speed and quickness. That used to be his game. But defenses have to react to you, and Gates still has a sense for body angles and positioning. He only started 4 games last year, only played in 11. He still had 56 catches for 630 yards. The previous 2 years, Gates had over 820 yards receiving in each of them. This is after his foot injury. Those over 820 yards receiving, those are actually better than he's done in the 2 years before that. The last time Gates had 1,000 yards was 2009. And I guarantee you that was not the last time defenses feared him going into a game.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think that that's the best spot for him. He's such a good rapport with Rivers. I can't even imagine him playing anywhere else. Ladarius Green is the more interesting question.
No, Maze, if you're the Chargers, though, let's say you have to, and they may very well, let's say you have to choose between Gates and Ladarius Green, who's younger and stylistically similar, but not as accomplished. Who do you pick to re-sign?
Antonio Gates, even though that's stupid and I shouldn't think that.
That was a long pause.
I like Ladarius Green, who we should talk about next. Do you feel like Ladarius Green, if he steps outside of that large Antonio Gates-sized shadow, can be a major contributor for an actual offense?
I'd almost have to go through and just read every film note I have on him from the last 2 years, because I don't think he ever totally carved out a niche. I think the Chargers like him. I think he's pretty good down the seams. He can run okay. But I never got the feel like when Gates came back, there was never any question of whether he'll take snaps for Green or who will be. Gates was clearly the number one tight end all along. And that, to me, that's a tad unsettling that Green, given his skill set, couldn't surpass, even though Gates is one of the greats of all time. I thought Green would do a little more to demand his presence on the field. I never got to feel like he was a guy that fully emerged in San Diego. And if he didn't emerge there in that system with that QB, what would indicate that he'd emerge somewhere else?
That's a very sober way of looking at it that I'm not really capable of. So I commend you, sir. Let's move on to another team that has two options at tight end and very different. The San Diego guys are pretty similar. These guys are very different. Their skill sets are diverse. They were drafted in the same year, probably for that reason. And that's Dwayne Allen and Kobe Fleener. If you had to choose between Dwayne Allen and Kobe Fleener, both as players and types of players, which guy would you rather have?
Dwayne Allen, zero hesitation.
I'm the exact same way. It's not even close to me. And staying on the field has been a bit of an issue for him. But that dude can play, man. And there just aren't that many guys in the league that are built like him right now.
It's that, and also I'm not a big fan of Kobe Fleener's game. And I hate to say that because he's a friend of the MMQB. He's done stuff for us. He's been real helpful to us. I don't know him. But I think there are just way too many negative plays. Drop balls, failed routes, balls that he doesn't get open on that the coverage suggests he should have been open on. I don't know what I'm going to get from Kobe Fleener week in and week out. And more often than not, it seems like I don't like what I'm getting from him. I don't think he developed at all the way they were hoping he developed there when they drafted him in the second round.
I agree with you. I think that Dwayne Allen is the better player. Though my dream scenario, which is going to be really hard because they don't have any money again, what if Dwayne Allen went to Pittsburgh?
I get what you're saying. The thing with Dwayne Allen, if he went to Pittsburgh, because they need a replacement for Heath Miller. That's what you're getting at.
I am. They need a Dwayne guy Allen who is in line, can block, and also can catch the ball in the middle of the field.
Well, I think the guy that's really Dwayne Allen's game is similar to Moore is their other free agent, and that's fullback / H-back Will Johnson. I don't quite know what Dwayne Allen is. He's not a pure tight end to me. He's a move player. He's a guy that works. He's a much better number two tight end than number one tight end to me, and whoever signs him needs to be very consciously aware of that because I don't see him as a guy that detaches from the formation or lines up and beats even good safeties consistently off the line of scrimmage next to an offensive tackle. I see him more as a hybrid type of guy.
All right, fine. You can throw cold water on me. That's fine with me. We'll move on.
Yeah, no, you're offended about my Dwayne Allen thing. How about last name or, I don't know, maybe you got other names. Well, we need to do three more here because Jared Cook and Ben Watson are tight end free agents, plus Vernon Davis is a guy everybody knows. And
I don't care about any of those guys.
Well, that's, why not? I mean, I know what you mean. To me, that looks very shiny through the store window just because of the names, and then you get in there and there's something wrong with the packaging.
Is it because the packaging is old and tattered?
Well, Jared Cook, you know how old – I actually spent a lot of time with Jared – not a lot, but we had dinner with Jared Cook's agent at the Combine through a mutual friend. And I was saying – she asked me what I thought, and I told her we'd actually talked about Jared Cook on the podcast that night. And, you know, you probably don't want to listen to it because he'd just been released. She pointed out, so how old would you guess Jared Cook is?
I bet he's 28.
How'd you know that? See, I thought – why did you think he's old then? That's not old. I thought for sure he was in his 30s, and turns out I think 28 is the number. I think you're right on with that. Why would you call that old? How old are you, Maze?
Oh, no, I'm not talking about Jared Cook being old. I'm talking about Vernon Davis and Ben Watson being old. Jared Cook, the packaging was always very shiny, and then you'd get inside and you'd open the action figure and an arm would be missing. That's what Jared Cook's career is. I mean, it always looked a lot better than it actually was in practice. That's just how his entire career has been. He looks like a monster, and then you get on the field, and it's just not there. He's not a guy I'm willing to keep take another shot on. I fall in love with guys for what they look like and how they move, and it comes back to bite me all the time. I still think Derek Morgan is going to the Hall of Fame. Jared Cook is not going to be one of those guys that it happens with.
Vernon Davis was excellent when he came out. Now, 32, he's 32 now. He should not be washed up. That's not old in the NFL these days. I mean, not the tight end position where we've seen other guys still be effective into their 30s, like Ben Watson, for example, who got put in a really good system in New Orleans last year, and he's familiar with it. He knows how to run it, and look at his numbers. They were great. Ben Watson needs to be in the right system, though. But Davis, he should have been more in the Tony Gonzalez, Antonio Gates class, guys that remain productive late in their careers. I think his problem, though, he's not a high football IQ guy like those other guys would be, or at least like Gates would be. He was always more of an athlete than a football IQ guy, which is why I was shocked that Denver traded for midseason and thought that he would learn the offense on the fly like that, because that was never his game.
That's all right. That's enough Vernon Davis talk for me. We need to get to these other positions. We're going to be here for 6 hours. Offensive tackle is an interesting group. There are some names in there. There are some highly drafted guys in there. I think you can find a couple quality starters in this group. If you had to pick one of them, not Donald Penn, let's just throw him out just based on age. But if you had to pick one of the other guys from this group, who would you want as a mid-tier solid starting player on your team?
If I could get Kelvin Beachum from Pittsburgh at that kind of money, I'd probably do that. I think he's the best athlete. The other guys at the top of the list would be Russell Okung, Andre Smith, Mitchell Schwartz, who I think will get the second highest contract behind whoever's the top left tackle is. I think Schwartz will cash in at right tackle. Then you get into the Joe Barksdale, Bobby Massey. Boy, that tails off pretty faster, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it does. And so Bobby Massey's interesting. I think Arizona lets him go. That's why they drafted DJ Humphreys. The guy that I'm really I really like Kelvin Beachum. I have for a while. He doesn't look like a left tackle in the same way a lot of other guys do, and I think people depress his value as a result of that. But that dude can just play. And coming off an injury, I think his value is probably a little less than it should be. I think a team can get value there. Mitchell Schwartz is interesting, and This is, I was thinking this pretty much after the Super Bowl, watching Mike Remmers play, who's also a free agent, actually. In a way, I think that right tackle market is kind of like the quarterback market right now, in the sense that you don't want anyone below a certain threshold, because living that life is just something you don't want to imagine. And I think that's why a guy like Mitchell Schwartz is going to get overpaid right now. Just based on the wasteland that is tackles and offensive line play in this league, you just can't let a guy like Mitchell Schwartz go by the wayside if he's available. You need players like right now.
Yeah. I think the best way to sum up offensive line, and especially right tackle, is you don't have to be great at it. In fact, you don't want to spend the money to be great at the position in most schemes, but there's not a single scheme where you can get away with being awful at it. You have to be average there. And so it becomes an insurance policy, essentially, and how expensive of a policy do you want to buy? And there will be a team, especially after what happened in the Super Bowl. A lot of teams in the NFL have bad right tackles. It's probably the weakest position in terms of demand on the position and then what the guys can actually deliver.
Totally.
I think there will be a team that will overpay just because they're so sick of dealing with issues at right tackle. Mitchell Schwartz is not a dominant player, but you'll plug him in and forget he's in there, and that's the goal with any right tackle.
Yep, I totally agree. And Russell Okung is a name that probably isn't worth what people think he is. I think Donald Penn will be back in Oakland. And after that, it's not really an awe-inspiring group. Not a ton of names that you're very interested in.
Would you sign Andre Smith from the Bengals? Would you sign him?
I think he's kind of in that Mitchell Schwartz camp. Just in the sense of that guy is not terrible, and you need guys that aren't bad. I think tackle is like quarterback right now. It's you can't be awful. You have to be average at the very least, because you have to give yourself a chance. All right, let's get to pretty much my favorite area of any football conversation. It's guard time. Let's do this. It is a weird group of guys. I will start with a guy we probably could have mentioned in the tackle group, but I'm going to consider him a guard. And that's probably my favorite free agent in this entire group, and that's Kelechi Osemele from Baltimore. Baltimore restructured Joe Flacco's contract, I think, partly to be able to pay for a guy like Osemele. But I really, if I'm a team like Chicago, a team that needs interior offensive line help, I'm tossing money at this dude. I don't know about you.
I would go for Osemele. I think he's one of the 10 best free agents out there. He was good or adequate when he had to play left tackle down the stretch this season. His best position is clearly at guard. I would put him in a zone scheme, something that gets him on the move. He's exceptional. When he's on, he's as good as anyone in the league at working off of double teams and up to the second level.
Totally.
In a zone blocking scheme. So that's why Baltimore, they know that. They're going to want him back, and they're a zone-based offense. So he's going to get paid big money by someone just because the team – he's one of the exceptions when I said earlier that you become a free agent because the team gives up on you. Some guys slip through the cracks, and they become free agents due to just strictly financial shakeout, and that's the case with Baltimore. They do not want to get rid of Osemele. They would take a step back if he were to leave their offense. They know that.
Do you think he's worth more than Mike Iupati got last year from Arizona?
Yes.
I agree.
That's my knee-jerk reaction. Iupati is – that's another guy. So Osemele is a zone scheme. Iupati is very specifically tailored for a gap scheme, meaning
totally.
A pull blocker on power, that kind of thing.
Yep.
Iupati is an average pass protector. Osemele is an above-average pass protector.
I think you will see him set the market for guaranteed money for guards. Mike Iupati got $22.5 million last year. I think Osemele will get more, and I think he's worth more. I'd give it to him.
What would you pay the next – to me, the best – next? We'll read off the guards, and I'll tell you the one I think's next best. But the guys people are probably familiar with, Jeff Allen from the Chiefs, Alex Boone from the Niners, Brandon Brooks from the Texans, Incognito from the Bills, Ramon Foster from the Giants, and Jeff Schwartz, Mitchell Schwartz's brother from the Giants. It's always also Jari Evans from the Saints, and then Evan Mathis. Of those guys, I think the next best in the group, even though he's a little bit older than ideal, is Incognito.
He had a great season. And what he's going to get is very interesting. He's 33 years old. So you don't want to toss him a lot of guaranteed money over several years. But he's a guy that you want on your team, man. I mean, he's played really well last season. And that was a huge reason that team was better than we thought they were going to be. Because their offensive line, that could have been a disaster, was not.
I thought he deserved first team all pro because they used him as their feature move blocker. He was one of the best pull blockers in the NFL, and it's a very diverse pulling scheme that Greg Roman, their coordinator there in Buffalo, runs. So I thought his season was great. I thought he showed up not very much in pass protection, which is a good thing. He did tail off a little bit late in the season, though, which I think complicates the discussion with him because you've got the age factor and then a guy that tailed off just a tad. It's almost like, I mean, then there's, you know, the other one that people are going to want to know about is Evan Mathis, who was almost the inverse of that, where he looked old and banged up all year long. He sat for a while, got healthy, and then looked pretty decent down the stretch in the playoffs. I'll be curious to see what kind of deal he gets anywhere. I don't think anyone's signing Mathis for more than 1 or 2 years tops, but it's the amount of guaranteed money that gets thrown at these guys is what I'll be real interested to see.
I think they can help good teams. I think good teams would be smart to sign them, but I wouldn't go anything long-term. The guy that's interesting to me in this group, just based on age, is Jeff Allen. I mean, Jeff Allen's 26 years old, and he's a player that could help a good team. I think he's similar to I think he's a lesser player than Rodney Hudson was, but what Rodney Hudson came in and did for Oakland, I think Jeff Allen can do that for a young team that needs solid pieces.
And I don't have a great feel on Allen coming off this past season because he moved around a lot. Kansas City had injuries throughout the interior line. This is probably a testament to him that he could play multiple positions.
I totally agree.
But yeah, but he'll be an interesting one too because he's not an old guy. He doesn't have a recent solid record on film because of the inconsistency of where he lined up. He was hurt himself at times too. I like Jeff. I think he's gotten better, certainly with experience, though. I know I would say that.
We'll talk about this later on, but just a 2 second point. Andy Heck is a really good position coach. Every single time someone comes in there and becomes a free agent, people are like, "Oh yeah, that guy. I think I want that guy in my team."
You're right.
I mean, that guy, there is no way that offensive line should be as good as it is. He's one of the best position coaches in the league. I've had one, like, 10-minute conversation with him once. He's not a guy I know very well or anything. I'm not trying to pump him up.
Yeah.
But he's just done a really good job.
Yeah, and I've tried to get to know him. Andy Reid's not a big fan of letting position coaches out in the public like that, and I understand that. But Duvernay-Tardif, their right guard, I thought was bad last year, but they feel – he improved down the stretch, and I would agree with that. And then Mitch Morse, their center, a rookie, also was solid for him. So that's a good testament to the job that the O-line coach Andy Heck did.
And Mitch Morse, who was a college tackle. I mean, that's a huge transition in a spread offense. So let's get to centers very quickly. Alex Mack is going to get overpaid because he's a name and because center is a position where I think it has more value than it has in the past. So somebody's going to toss some money at him. I'm not exactly sure who. I wouldn't be surprised if Jacksonville did. They tried to a couple years ago, and their center from this year, Stefan Wisniewski, is also a free agent.
Yeah, that would make sense because Jacksonville, they're going to value O-line a little bit more because of the nature of Blake Bortles. Bortles is built for – he's another guy like we talked about Doug Martin with Tampa Bay's scheme, more classic old school. Bortles is built to play that way. They're going to spread out more. I get that. I know that's what they do. But at their heart of hearts, they're a deep drop play action game. And having a guy like Alex Mack who could also help set the protections, that's a pretty good thing given how young they are at quarterback and receiver. A deeper drop passing game, you'd want a veteran center there who can help identify the blitzes so that the QB and the receivers don't have to do so much work with hot route recognition.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a guy that is a solid presence in the middle of any offense, and that's what you want. And free agents like him don't come along very often. And Andy, I am not a free agent, but I am a freelancer for the Sports Illustrated Time Inc. Corporation, which makes my tax season a little bit more complicated than everyone else's. But for the best way to manage your books and make tax season easy, get FreshBooks, a super intuitive tool that makes creating and sending invoices extremely easy for freelancers and small business owners. FreshBooks stands out where it really counts, getting you paid. You can create and send professional invoices in just 30 seconds. You'll see exactly when your client looked at the invoice you've emailed, tracking the status of all your outstanding invoices for you. FreshBooks can even send late payment reminders to your clients automatically, which means you're not wasting time chasing down and fighting clients for payments. The results speak for themselves. FreshBooks users get paid 5 days faster on average. Don't take my word for it. Right now, FreshBooks is offering our listeners 30 days of unrestricted use, totally free, and you don't need a credit card to sign up. just go to FreshBooks.com/sports and enter sports in the How You Heard About Us section. That's FreshBooks.com/sports and enter sports in the How You Heard About Us section. All right, Andy, let's get to the defensive side of the ball. We're going to have to breeze through these a little bit quicker. I know you want to talk about interior linemen for like 45 minutes, so let's start with the defensive backs. Cornerback, usually a position, like you said, where guys hit the market for a reason, and the bigger names we see are typically buyer beware. But I think among this group, there are some players that are pretty interesting. And I'm going to start with Sean Smith in Kansas City. He missed the first part of the season last year because he was suspended. Big, big guy, kind of fits what a lot of teams want in their man corners these days. And I think he's the type of player that can help somebody.
Yeah, he's long-armed, he's strong, and he's good on the boundary. Don't ask him to play the slot. Put him in the boundary on a scheme like any team that plays cover three that carries the seams, which is like man-to-man cover three. I mean, we don't need to get into the details of it, but like the Cardinals, the Jets, the Browns, the Packers, teams that play man-to-man-oriented cover three, the Chiefs are another one, work extremely well for him. The other team I could see him, the other system he could work in, I think would be the cover three that Seattle plays, that kind of zone-based physical perimeter cover three. Falcons, Seahawks, Jaguars, those teams.
Who do you think among this group ends up coming away with the bigger deal? Do you think it's Smith? Do you think it's Janoris Jenkins? I think those are probably the two candidates to get the biggest contracts.
I'll give you a third. I think it's going to be Casey Hayward.
Really?
Yeah, because Hayward, I think it will, because he can cover the slot and man-to-man as well and play the perimeter. Like the other guys, Jenkins is an outside corner. He's improved. He was much better last season than the year before, where double moves were a problem for him. He seems to have ironed that out. Prince Amukamara is the other top-of-the-market guy. He improved a lot. He's not flashy, but his route recognition and understanding of angles on boundary coverage got a lot better. But all these guys we're talking about, none of them are slot guys as well. Smith's not a slot guy. Norman, even though he's not in the discussion anymore, he was not a slot guy. It's hard to find guys who can play outside and play the slot. And then the slot corners who are available, who are good, Brandon Boykin, kind of Patrick Robinson, although he's not a slot guy so much anymore, but they're not outside guys. Hayward's the most versatile corner in the free market. And he's another one that I don't think Green Bay gave up on him. Green Bay just feels that position's expensive, and they've got some good guys in the draft last year. There's not a flaw with Casey Hayward. He's a good player, and I would sign him for big money.
I totally agree with you. I'm just surprised you said that. He's kind of like, to me, he's like a poor man's Chris Harris. That's how I would describe him.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. I could see that. I get that. And he's got very good ball skills. He might actually have slightly better ball skills than Harris. Harris is a better player. But Hayward, keep in mind his rookie season, he was very good. So he can play man-to-man, but he's not just a man-to-man guy. He can also play zone out of the slot.
Totally.
And that's extremely uncommon. I mean, there are some guys, I know like the Jets, for example, will have Revis go into the slot. If that's where the number one receiver goes. But they won't do that if it's a zone coverage call. Revis will not play the zone in slot. So even these number one corners that travel with top receivers, you can't ask them to go inside. Hayward, you can ask them to play any coverage anywhere on the field.
I would be not at all upset at all if he was wearing a Chicago Bear uniform come next fall. Not at all. I'd be very, very happy. Because
work out too, theoretically. That could work out because that's a Vic Fangio will play man and he'll play zone, and they have a bad need of that position. That's the kind of team, and it wouldn't hurt to have him stay within the division either, because he's going to be more familiar with everything and everybody he goes up against. So that's a good type of destination for him. Do your Bears have room for that? Where are they? Yeah, they got room.
49 million, baby. We got a lot of money to work with.
That's what happens when you don't have good players.
Come on now. We know that's true. You don't have to say it. All right, let's talk about a couple teams that I think are a little bit interesting with this group. One, Sean, you said Arizona with Sean Smith, which made me start to salivate. I don't know if they can afford it, but there's a couple teams here where you'd think that secondary has been a strength for them the last couple seasons, and it's actually crept up as a really big need. The Cardinals probably need another cornerback, and Tony Jefferson is also a free agent. We'll get to safeties in a second. But Cincinnati is also in that group. You have Pac-Man Jones and Leon Hall as free agents right now. So they need to do some signing there. Do you think either of those teams make a ploy for someone outside of their system, outside of their roster from last year, and switch it up a little bit?
Maybe. That's going to be a function of price, because Cincinnati sure. does have Drake Kirkpatrick and Darqueus Dennard, both first-rounders.
Yep.
And I would assume Dennard is going to become a starter this year. So I think if they can get Leon Hall or Jones back at the right price, my guess is they'd rather – well, I think Jones is a little younger than Hall. Well, Hall's only 31, so my guess is they'd rather have Hall because he can play the slot and he's also not certifiably insane. The other guy you mentioned, Arizona, they badly need a number two corner. Jerrod Powers is a free agent. He's probably not going to be back with them. I think they would rather draft a guy than sign a free agent. The thing about that, though, with those teams that play man-to-man out of cover three, it's not always the easiest scheme to learn, although that usually applies more to linebackers and safeties than corners. I think if you can find a corner that's just good on the perimeter and man coverage, that's suitable. But what I'm getting at is the Cardinals, they're better off having a veteran in there than they are a rookie. But my guess is they'll go for a rookie because the veterans, they know how that goes. They don't want Powers back.
Let's go to safeties, and let's stick with Cincinnati right now. They're both of their top guys, Reggie Nelson and George Iloka, are free agents. Nelson's 32, Iloka's 26. Do you imagine they let Iloka get away?
They might. Iloka is going to command a lot of money in free agency.
Yeah,
I think
he is.
I put him as my number one dark horse free agent this year.
So do you think, I mean, do you think he gets more money than a guy like Eric Weddle?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Without okay. question. I mean, Weddle's in his 30s and Iloka was a better player last year. He's not a great player yet, but he's also not fully finished. He's a long physical guy who played a little bit of corner inside in college. I don't think you ask him to do that in the NFL, but if he gets stuck in that position, it's not the end of the world. He has the size and physicality to play the box, and yet he's been a center field type safety for much of his time in Cincinnati. The only thing you have to consider with Iloka is that he played a lot of split safety coverage, and not a lot of teams play two high safeties on as many downs as Cincinnati did. So can he be a true single high safety or a true box safety in a different type of scheme? That's the only thing you have to wonder. I think the skill set's so immense that a team will gamble with that and assume they can coach it into him. Iloka's going to get a lot. The other thing, May, is got to keep in mind, the biggest mismatch creators in the NFL right now are tight ends. Would you agree?
Yep, totally.
There are no safeties with the size to cover tight ends. And it was pointed out to me in this draft, there are, of the top 25 safeties available, I think only 8 of them are either 6'2" or 220 pounds. And out of those 8, only half of them are both, are 6'2 and 220. So there aren't big guys at the safety position, and that's a problem because tight ends last year, there were like 18 or 20 tight ends that had 55 or more catches. So nobody has anyone that can match up to tight ends in today's NFL. Iloka's a solution to that problem. You could theoretically put him on a longer tight end just because he has the size to do that.
6'4", 225. The team I really want to see him land with, what if he was in Minnesota? Just chew on that for a second. Him, Harrison Smith.
I get what you're saying. Minnesota, they've got a little bit of room for it. They've got some guys to re-sign. The thing with Minnesota, it would work, obviously, because Minnesota ran the Cincinnati stuff and Harrison Smith plays the role of Reggie Nelson as their edge blitzer and their other safety. If I'm Minnesota, though, I think I re-sign Andrew Sandejo because he'll probably cost 1/4 of what Iloka costs. Iloka is going to cost so much money is my concern.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that he is. Absolutely. All right, let's get to a couple more of these guys very quickly. Rashad Johnson, a guy in Arizona that I really like. I think that they would miss him. I mean, this is the type of thing. It seems like these positions are so strong and they're such areas of strength, and then you just start hemorrhaging guys. It happens very quickly.
Yeah, and Johnson's he's a high football IQ, very high, but he has a lot of limitations in space. So I could see him even signing a little bit later in free agency. He's got to go to the right system. You can't put him on an island very much.
What about Weddle? What do you think is going to happen?
I think a veteran team that needs one difference maker, and I don't have any of that. I mean, I don't think they do it because this isn't their style of play. But let's say theoretically, a team like Pittsburgh, where they use the safeties in a lot of different ways, they ask a lot of their guys in terms of awareness and route recognition. That's the kind of team Weddle needs to go to. That's what about really, we haven't really even mentioned? Yeah, and I don't think he'll do it because again, that's not how they do things in Pittsburgh. But it would make sense for all parties stylistically. How about Tashawn Gibson? I'm surprised that he's not. We're looking at Roto-World's list of free agents because they do a good job. And our buddy Evan Silva's got Gibson at number 5 on his safeties. I would think he'd be a little higher than that.
He was amazing 2 years ago, had a bit of a down year last year. But he's really young, and the heights are very high. I would take a chance on him for the right price. I mean, he's a guy that is a true difference maker. He led the league in interceptions 2 seasons ago. He had a huge numbers with that in the past. That's not the most important thing, but the dude has some playmaking ability, and you can't discount that.
Yeah, no, that was the term I was told by someone that coached him in Cleveland was difference maker.
Let's get to the linebackers. Not a really exciting group. Again, I think the guy that stands out more than anyone is obviously Danny Trevathan. Just fits the modern way the league works. I think that a lot of teams would be very excited to have a guy like him. I mean, is there anybody even in his conversation, you think, among this group?
Well, I think in the conversation, I think Jarrell Freeman can be in the conversation.
Okay.
He's probably a little more dynamic than Trevathan, but he's also more up and down. So Trevathan, to me, is the better free agent signing than Freeman. I think Derek Johnson goes back to Kansas City. He's
absolutely
such a good fit for what they do. Yeah, Kansas City would take a big, big step back if they lost Derek Johnson. And he'd probably take a big step back if he had to go somewhere else at this point in his career.
Go ahead. Oh, no, I agree. I mean, I think I totally agree with you. I think the other name that I really hope that Mark Barron goes back to St. Louis. I mean, I just think it's a perfect fit.
I do, too.
I mean, it's. I don't understand why they'd want him to get away, but they have some choices to make. We didn't really talk about Janoris Jenkins, but they have a ton of cap space. I think they're going to bring him back. The other guy that I think is an interesting, smart player is Vincent Ray. I like Vincent Ray. I think he can be a really solid contributor for the right price.
I feel the same way. I've liked Vincent. I've had a little crush on him for a few years now. And he can play nickel. Anymore, you got to look at linebackers that are good in nickel. And Ray's
totally
not an athletic dynamo, but he gets the job done. He gets to point A to point B efficiently. So I think guys that can play, like Steven Tolick's a guy that can kind of play some nickel. Rolando McClain's an interesting one because he played nickel last year, even though he's built like a true middle linebacker, true first and second down player. I'm trying to look at other names. I mean, Mason Foster, I liked him at the down the stretch for Washington. I think he needs to be in a Tampa 2 type of scheme or a pure zone scheme. Zach Brown's one from Tennessee. He never quite panned out. You know, remember he was a big athlete coming out of North Carolina.
Totally. I mean, he's the type of guy that it seems like all these Titans defenders that aren't talented but have a lot of athleticism are people I fall in love with. Zach Brown was another one of them.
Yeah.
Let's,
hey, one more for you, a linebacker.
All right.
And I think he's worth signing. I think he can be a difference maker is Tahir Whitehead from Detroit.
Interesting.
Inconsistent
I like him
last
Detroit.
Season. Yeah, he's explosive. I mean, he can chase down to the perimeter. He gets faster as he approaches the ball. Now he doesn't brace for contact, so he's a little bit of a hitter. I think if he plays with discipline, and they felt that he did in Detroit last year, he just wasn't able to get on the field still. He wasn't as good as they'd hoped last season. But remember, 2 years ago when Tolick was out, Whitehead was the guy, and now he played next to Levy in what was one of the best run defenses in the NFL.
I think all of these names, just if we're going to throw out a couple teams to make this a little more functional, Green Bay obviously needs a linebacker. Who knows if they're going to be able to draft one? They don't like spending big in free agency, but they desperately need someone at that position. That's a team that to think about. And the other one I would throw out there is Atlanta. Atlanta's a team with money. They need pass rushing help and a receiver. We've already talked about that, but they also need a huge upgrade there. And again, I sound like a broken record. The Bears can't go forward with their current group of linebackers. It's John Timu, Christian Jones, and Lamine Barrow. That is not that's not a reasonable group of people for an NFL team right now. So those are the three teams
I
would
say. They need all new players there, yeah. So, all right, so I'll steal your segue here and go to defensive ends before we end on tackles. You mentioned Atlanta needing a pass rusher. That's a great example. They badly need a pass rusher. I mean, they'll probably draft another guy to accommodate Vic Beasley. They still need one. of the guys available, do you see any of these guys being worth high-end money? Pierre Paul, Mario Williams, Greg Hardy, Alden Smith with the suspension asterisk, Tom Bahaly, Bruce Irvin, maybe Nick Perry. We're kind of getting down the list now here.
None of them excite me very much. I think that Pierre Paul is – he's going to get overpaid just based on the name. Somebody – some owner is going to be looking at the free agent list offhandedly and be like, well, what about Jason Pierre Paul? Why don't we want him? And it's going
to
get –
well, the answer to that would be he doesn't have a whole hand anymore, and that's yes, been a problem with the way he's played.
There are many answers to that. But so I think he's concerned. Mario Williams is a guy I always felt was overrated. I think his sack numbers are trumped up. He gets a lot of second effort sacks, which they still count, but he is not an at the snap play effector in the way that the other great pass rushers in this league are. I don't know how you feel about that.
No, I feel the same way. He's gotten more money off of pure potential than anyone in NFL history, because he got the $100 million deal after he played, I think it was 5 games 1 year, and he was hurt, but that's when he hit free agency and he got big money in Buffalo. And he got the rookie contract as the number one pick back when the CBA did not account for guys getting overpaid in the first round. So it's time to call that off. I don't think he'll get big-time money now. I think he's more of a base defensive end, a strong side D end, and I think Pierre Paul's the same way. To me, the intriguing guy of the group, for terms of upside, I think Hardy's the best player, but I wouldn't touch him with a 9-foot pole.
I'm the same way.
I think the intriguing guy, yeah, we know why. I think Bruce Irvin's the one that's most interesting to me.
I agree. I mean, he's a guy that's young that you can probably get a lot out of. He's somebody I would take a chance on. I think Ali is interesting just based on production. The guy has been really good recently. He's 32 years old. But if you're a team like Arizona and you can get him on a 1-2 year deal with a decent base salary, less than the deal that DeMarcus Ware got, but in that same kind of vein, he's somebody I would still think it would be a piece on a really good defense.
Yeah, they sub a lot there. They do a lot of rotation. If I'm Arizona, I think I just re-signed Dwight Freeney because he was so good in sure. The 25 snaps a game role for him last year. But I get what you're saying with Tom Bahaly, and I thought he would kind of hit this end of his career, and he really hasn't done that yet. Kansas City will not want him back because they got Dee Ford there now, and Ford was very good for them down the stretch last season. If he becomes more consistent, then he's going to be as good as Hall Lee has been for the last several years in KC. Hall Lee's been probably the most underrated edge player in the NFL in the last 5 to 7 years.
I totally agree. He's just a consistent contributor that is always there and always causing some sort of disruption. All right, man, let's get to your main event here. I know you're excited.
With defensive tech, well, we don't need to sit and talk about it for super long. I just think suffice it to say, D-tackle is the best, and some of it, defensive end's not bad either, but I think D-tackle's the best position in this year's free agency. The irony is it's also probably the best position in the draft. So just because D-tackle's the best, and I asked the GM this at the combine, I said, well, which market impacts which? And he said, well, without question, the draft will depress the free agency market every time, regardless of who's in the free agency discussion. So that's not going to apply. Like, someone's still going to sign Malik Jackson to huge money. But I'll be interested to see what happens with a guy like Nick Fairley, for example, who had a very nice season off the bench in St. Louis last year, played with energy, played with effort, showed the explosiveness, he could shed blocks, showed what we thought he'd be in Detroit. I could see a guy like him not getting the deal you would expect just because teams feel they'll be able to draft those guys this year, which means there are going to be some good bargain values at this position in free agency in 2016.
What are the couple of the names that maybe aren't as big that you're interested to see what they're worth and where they go?
Jay Howard from Kansas City could rush the passer in nickel when you wouldn't expect it, but mostly he's an excellent base down player. Damon Harrison with the Jets, I think most people know him.
Haloti Ngata can still Harrison.
Play. You love Harrison?
Yes. That guy is a beast.
Yeah. Guys that have good lateral movement in short areas, to me, they're very valuable, and Harrison's one of those guys. Terrence Knighton, I thought, was tremendous last season as a first and second down player. Now, the problem is he's got unbelievable movement and feet for his base, for his tree trunk of a body. But the problem is he only plays first and second down.
Yeah.
And then let me give you two more. Akeem Hicks from the Patriots, but mostly from the Saints. outstanding as a point of attack defender early in his career, could shed blocks with ferocity. And Cedric Thornton for the Eagles is an outstanding all-around player who can line up anywhere along the D-line.
I love Cedric Thornton. And I know Vinny Curry is the guy that got that monster deal, which doesn't surprise me because Vinny Curry is an animal. But Cedric Thornton is a guy that just is a very functional piece of your defense, can do everything. He's one of my favorite guys on this list. The guy I'm really interested in, obviously Malik Jackson's going to get paid. I mean, we'll figure out how much it's for. Somebody's going to toss a ton of money at him because in the pass rushing defensive tackle market, it's no longer a cheap thing anymore. I mean, you see what Sue got paid. You saw what Gerald McCoy got paid. He's not that player, but he's right on that second tier down. So he's going to get a ton of money. One thing, just one kind of team connection before we get out of here that I'm interested in. What if Jay Howard went to Houston? Wouldn't that make sense?
He would be a good fit. Yeah, he'd be a good fit because Houston does a lot of – they do a lot of what looks like a 3-4 front, but it's really a 3-4 under front, meaning that the three technique is on the weak side of the formation. And why that's important is because when the three tech's on the weak side, it amounts to a 4-3. It's the same thing, just a different presentation almost. So they do a lot of one gap stuff is what I'm getting at. And Howard would be a guy that when they want to go into those under fronts, I think he would be a good one gap player for him, a surprisingly good one. And he could still take on double teams as well, which you need, because if you're a 3-4 one gap team, someone still has to double team or play two gaps somewhere else. And I think Howard's a good enough player that you could, even though he seems scheme specific, I think you could justify him in almost any system.
I
liked him a lot.
I totally agree. I think the teams to watch for here, Detroit badly needs help. They re-signed Tyron Walker for 1 year, but they're a team that needs defensive tackle help. Seattle needs that big run stuffing guy. What if Seattle took a run at Terrence Knighton as their early down guy?
I could see that. That could work. The one thing, so let's keep in mind who he'd be replacing, who's Brandon Mebane.
Brandon Mebane.
They might just want to retain him. Yeah, the one thing that Mebane did well is lateral, we go back to that lateral movement, he plays very low to the ground. I think of Knighton a little bit more gap penetrating, but, you know, Seattle, I mean, gap penetration's certainly not discouraged in Seattle's scheme.
No.
So, yeah, that would work. Does Seattle have money to do that kind of thing, though?
They don't have a ton of money, but they have more than you think they would based on the type of deals they've had to sign. They have about $23 million in cap space.
Yeah, and they do have need at the position because Ataya Rubin, who was better for them than he was in Cleveland, he's a free agent as well. And Seattle's always wanted depth, too. They draft for depth at D-tackle, but they don't have that. Now, Seattle will probably sign a free agent at that spot, yeah.
I agree. The one thing I would say to another, just one more team connection thing, I think Oakland should be very much in the running for Malik Jackson. If somebody's going to overpay for him, I think that's the team that should do it because he knows Jack Del Rio. They need a little pass rushing help inside. It just makes sense to me.
Yeah, well, and Oakland needs help at a lot of positions defensively, and they've got a ton of money. So, yeah, I would even say, I don't know anything, but I would say the Raiders would be the front runners for the Malik Jackson sweepstakes. I think he fits exactly like what you just said.
All right, man. I think that's all we got. We touched on pretty much everything we wanted to. That position is really interesting to me. I think the way the running back market shakes out is going to be fascinating. How much those secondary receivers get. Is it the Golden Tate $16 million guarantee type deal? There's going to be a lot to watch out for in the next week or so, and our next show will probably be a recap of the first day. I figure we'll record it late Wednesday and just have it go up on Thursday. Does that sound good by you?
Yeah, works for me. Looking forward to it.
So we'll be a day late next week, but just keep your eye out. And as always, we really appreciate you guys listening.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team. Every day.